Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, great to be back with you. Thank you for dropping by. It continues to be very eventful times across the globe and within financial markets. Once again, one of the standout performers has been gold. Love to dig into this topic a bit with you today. Maybe we can start by pointing out what's been driving gold's rally as of late. What have you been picking up on?
Well, for sure, Dan, and thanks for having me again. Let me just start with the three most distinct buckets of demand for gold. The first one, clearly, and this is the oldest source of demand for gold, is demand for physical gold. Most of this is driven from the jewelry industry, whose biggest customer base comes from India. If you've ever attended an Indian wedding, then you understand India's extraordinary cultural affection to gold. Multiply that with 1.4 billion Indians, India is the most populous nation on earth, and you can quickly see how the rise of India and the rise of gold are really connected at the hip and the shoulder, and we do expect India to remain one of the strongest growth countries in the world for years to come. The second source of demand is financial investors, like many of our clients and audience. Most financial investors don't actually buy physical gold because storage is quite costly, as you can imagine. So instead, they buy gold ETFs often in order to diversify against inflation or against the soft dollar or against systemic risks, what have you. And as global uncertainty has skyrocketed this year, not surprisingly so, is demand for gold ETFs, which is also multiplied. We've seen a lot of this originating out of Asia, the Gulf countries, but also the U.S. And the third, and you know, then in my view, this is the most interesting source of demand. The third one is central bank buying. See, central banks, they tend to be strategic, not cyclical buyers of gold. They buy it irrespective of price. Some, like the Central Bank of Poland or Singapore, are buying gold to diversify their balance sheet. Just this week, I spoke to several central bankers who feel that today's gold price will still look like a good entry point in a couple of years. Time will tell. Meanwhile, the People's Bank of China really has an interesting strategic interest in buying gold, not least to support its digital currency, the e-yuan. You know, since the U.S. and Europe sized about $300 billion of Russian FX reserves after its invasion of Ukraine, that clearly triggered a lot of interest in the global south and around the world to de-dollarize its trading relations. And to that extent, China has been promoting its digital yuan, which is already being used by a third of all Chinese, and in quite a few of China's crude and coal imports. Now, here's the interesting little detail about this, because, you know, you might ask yourself, why would its trading partners accept a digital yuan instead of a dollar, which we all know and have been used to? Here's why. These digital yuans can be converted into gold at the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Now, isn't that interesting? I mean, it's somehow reminiscent of the old Bretton Woods system, and it explains why China's monthly gold purchases have really risen in lockstep with the circulation of its digital currency. So, no, I don't think that we're in a gold bubble. Instead, what I think we're seeing is historic changes in the global order, and these are just early steps in the long strategic ambition of many.
Well, Burkhard, thank you for those helpful thoughts. Very interesting to hear about those developments there in China and the overall demand drivers behind gold. It's interesting, another precious metal which has also been rallying on the tail of the gold rally seems to be silver. So, Burkhard, how does that fit into the overall precious metal or commodity rally?
Well, you're absolutely right to mention silver. And yet, silver buyers, the way I look at it, are quite different from gold buyers, because while gold's rise, the way I'd look at it, is largely driven by investors and central banks, silver's rally is really powered by industrial necessity. Take solar panels. Every solar panel uses about 20 grams of silver. Around the world, solar installations are soaring. It's become the cheapest source of electricity in many parts of the world because they're just outpowering traditional forms of electricity like coal and others. And yet, meanwhile, the other thing with silver is that supply is badly squeezed. Most silver mines are already facing declining grades and environmental issues around not only silver, but really all mines, frankly, drastically constrained supply. Even if you wanted to build a new mine today, it'll take you at least 20 years to open it. There's no sugarcoating that fact. So the silver story, like also the story about rare earth or copper, is really a story about industrial demand rapidly outstripping supply, which is increasingly constrained for years to come. So the bottom line, this silver rally is part and parcel of the global energy transition. And it's interesting to see that for the first time this year, renewables have actually become the biggest source of electricity globally. That will continue. And as their rise will continue because of cost advantages and what have you, because of power-hungry data centers, so will demand for silver and other rare earth and commodities and supply-demand imbalances.
Interesting, Burkhardt. So with those considerations in mind, does that imply that the silver rally will continue, even if for different reasons?
Well, I'd say yes and no. You know, the big picture, I think, is that the energy transition is really a transition from fossil resources to mineral resources. It's driven by the growing cost advantages of renewables, and that's why there's no turning back, and that's why crude prices, on the other hand, as we've all been observing at every gas station, has been softening this year, while the prices of silver, copper, and rare earth keep on rising. And it may well continue because of all these supply bottlenecks, but, you know, the no comes from good enough. Record high prices focus many people's minds on finding better solutions to generate, store, distribute renewable power. So while there's really no alternative to gold, a lot of people are researching for industrial alternatives to silver, copper, or rare earth materials, and that's why we've talked about this a few times. I think the power of better ideas, disruptive innovation, may well at some point, but not this year, not next year, limit the rally in some of these pricey metals or minerals.
That's very helpful clarity, Burkhardt. Appreciate those useful thoughts, as always. And as our longtime listeners know, at times you like to incorporate travel and book tips into our conversation. So one last question for today. I noted that in one of your letters, you also recommend an interesting novel, which I think was also called Gold. So can you share a bit of that with our listeners, some takeaways there?
Oh, with absolute pleasure. You have to read this novel. It's an absolutely breathtaking adventure novel called Gold. It was written exactly 100 years ago, 1925, by the Swiss author Blaise Cendrat. It became a great global success upon first publication and certainly still available in any good bookshop wherever you look at for it in the United States. It tells the amazing historical story of the bankrupt Swiss day thief, General Sutter, who fled the police from Switzerland, made his way to America, and became the self-proclaimed ruler of a vast empire in California, then known as New Helvetia. He founded the city of Sacramento, but when gold was discovered on his land, the great gold rush destroyed his empire, and societal greed and betrayal caused his grandiose and humbling downfall. It's a mesmerizing read, even more so these days with a gold rally going on.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating read, and as you pointed out, Burkhardt, very topical given our focus for today's episode. But Burkhardt, a very helpful update on gold precious metals. Always appreciate your time and for sharing your unique insights with our listeners and our clients, and I do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next week.
Well, absolutely. Thank you very much, Dan. The pleasure is my side every time. Speak to you again next week and have a good continuation for the rest of the day.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.